and thank you for joining us for The Good in Local Giving, a podcast all about giving to local causes, how good it can feel to give, and what good can come from making a difference locally. I'm your host, Sarah Fox, and this podcast is brought to you from Kent Community Foundation, or otherwise known as KCF. In this episode, we're focusing on the role of professional advisors in local giving and how you can help instill confidence in clients. We're also looking at the role an organisation like KCF plays in this too, alongside the advisors. And I'm joined today by two people who are in the know. Vicky Papworth, a specialist philanthropy advisor from Coutts, and Sophie Hoskins, development manager from KCF. If you're not familiar with Kent Community Foundation, they are one of the largest grant makers in Kent and Medway, working with accountants, wealth managers, solicitors, and financial advisors to help advise clients who are considering local philanthropy. The foundation forms part of a professional advisor's toolkit to help deliver confidence in local giving to high net worth individuals who want to make a difference and bring lasting social impact on local issues. KCF have asked me to kick off their first ever podcast episodes, and I very happily said yes because they're brilliant. Running my own coaching business following a 25-year career working in the arts and charity sector, I'm particularly curious about how we can do good and positively impact the issues that matter to us in ways that bring meaning and align with our core values, all of which I explore through my own podcast, Do Good and Do Well. When I was doing my research for this podcast, I heard an advisor, Emma Beeson, who co-authored Advising Philanthropists, Principles and Practice with Dr. Beth Breeze, talk about how advisors are part of the philanthropy ecosystem, and this episode focuses on that perspective. I'm so excited to introduce you to these people, to Sophie and Vicky, who can help us delve into this and understand the important role that advisors have in making a lasting difference locally. So let me introduce Vicky Papworth, Specialist Philanthropy Advisor within Coutts Family Office.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're a Spears 500 Top Recommended Philanthropy Advisor of 2022, and Vicky provides support to ultra high net worth clients and their families around their philanthropy and aspirations for giving, wealth succession, and preparing the next generation. With considerable experience of working as an advisor to private clients, charities, social enterprises, and government around donations and strategic funding, Vicky's priority is helping clients to ensure their significant wealth supports their family values and that they give effectively and intelligently to the causes they care about. And also joining us is Sophie Hoskin, Development Manager at Kent Community Foundation, where she's worked for the last 6 years. With a background in charities and the third sector, Sophie is an experienced major donor fundraiser with a particular interest in donor stewardship and philanthropy advice. She's lived and worked in Kent her whole life, largely in the third sector, and she is fantastically proud to work for the Community Foundation, enjoys making charitable giving an enjoyable and rewarding experience for KCF donors, and she loves hearing about and sharing the differences they make to local lives in Kent and Medway. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So, we've just recorded the other episode around with philanthropist Richard Oldfield and researcher Dr. Beth Breeze, and we talked about the joy and the meaning that can come from local giving. So I wonder, to start off this conversation, I'd love to hear your specific examples around what you've experienced or witnessed around joy and effectiveness of local giving. Vicky, would you like to start us off?
Oh, I'd be delighted. And I think, you know, a person's sense of place is really important, not just in terms of their philanthropy, but in terms of, you know, how they speak to their family values, their sense of place in the world. And so oftentimes when I'm speaking with those clients who want to give to charity, we start off with the question of where do you want to give? Do you want to give locally? Do you want to give regionally? Do you want to give globally? And it's a great way to really unpick people's passion for a cause or a community and their real desires to make a difference in the world. And so it's a great place to start, I think.
Have you got a specific example?
Let me give you an example of a client that I've been working with for about 18 months now, and she's really keen to work with her local community foundation, and I was delighted to make that introduction. Before I joined Coutts, I worked for the UK's network of community foundations, so I'm a great champion for the work that they do and the way that they connect donors to those often under the radar groups. So I was working with this particular donor, and she really wanted to do something locally. We experimented a little bit through her local community foundation, where she would fund particular groups for the cause that she cared about. But actually, she wanted to dig a little bit deeper. She wanted to do something a bit more meaningful. And what she's ended up doing is commissioning a local service. So funding a service that would not have existed without her help and support, and doing that through her local community foundation, because she would not have found a route to the groups that could help her deliver that service without their help and support. So it's just a really great way, I think, a really perfect example of showing how someone with the resources to make a difference can then reach out to those people who are plugged in on the ground and make those connections to those organisations that are really making the difference themselves.
Yeah. And how about you, Sophie? I mean, you must have a ton of examples to give in your work. It'd be lovely to hear them.
And that's one of the great joys, really, of working for the Community Foundation, is that we do have so many examples where someone's given a relatively small amount of money, but it's had a tremendous impact on charities and organisations. So I was trying to think of kind of a good case study I could use. And I thought one in particular might be relevant to some of the professional advisors listening, as it comes up quite frequently with us. And that was a donor, a couple, actually, who live in Kent, but they have their own national charitable trust, and that funds early intervention projects. They're interested in kind of the harder to fund, kind of less sexy projects, if you like. But although they live in Kent, they were really struggling to find the type of projects they wanted to fund. And they were interested in smaller charities, grassroots organisations, but in their own words, they didn't have the time or the capacity to kind of wade through the sea of good works of these organisations and small charities and what they were doing out there. So it was actually Coutts around 10 years ago now that made the connection with us, with the local community foundation. We had a number of conversations with them, worked out exactly what they wanted to do, and they've ended up setting up their own named fund with us, which is the main giving vehicle we use. It's kind of a donor advised fund. And through that, they've been able to widen and deepen their giving in Kent, make much more of an impact, really. And I went and visited one of the projects they funded, and that's an organisation in Thanet, so one of the most deprived areas of Kent. And it's a very small charity that works with vulnerable women, largely kind of minority ethnic women, asylum seekers, refugees. And it's all about kind of intercultural friendship, integration and language learning. And it was really interesting. They'd given a grant to this organisation. It was just coming out of the pandemic, and it enabled them to keep going. They pivoted, moved all their courses online, and just chatting to the women that the organisation supported. It was a lifeline for them during the pandemic. With their limited English, they weren't really, everything went online, didn't it? And so it was really hard for them to navigate. But this course kind of kept going and, yeah, was a lifeline for them. So it's just an example of what a relatively small amount of money can do, can change lives.
Yeah, amazing. In my introduction, I mentioned that idea that advisors are kind of one part of that philanthropy ecosystem. I wonder, Vicky, whether you can tell us more about that part. I mean, I hadn't heard of this role before I was asked to do this, so it'd be lovely to know sort of what part they play in this ecosystem.
Let me tell you a little bit about how I work with the donors here at Coutts, and then let's broaden it out to how professional advisors can really connect in with those specialist advisors, as well as helping clients and donors to make a real difference. So my lovely job here at Coutts is to work with our most generous clients who want to give to charity and to help them to do that really effectively. So part of my role would be to help clients build a strategy for their giving. So some of those questions that we talked about earlier, the hows, the wheres, the whys, but also to help connect them up with the organisations that they might support. So I think my job is probably slightly different to Sophie's in that I don't bring specific charities to a donor, but I do talk more broadly about the kinds of organisations that a donor might want to support. Once we've tried to dig down a little bit into, you know, the wheres and the hows, the causes, the scales, the geography. But in my experience, a lot of donors can be really worried about just getting started. You know, they're really worried about doing it right, reaching the right groups, you know, have they got enough money, and how to connect with those charities on the ground. So I think as a professional advisor, you know, if you're a specialist philanthropy advisor, great, you can give your clients the confidence that they need to go out and do that. But if you're another kind of professional advisor, I'd say it's your role to be the conductor of the orchestra. You know, your job is to bring in a variety of different experts in the same way that you'd bring in, you know, lawyers, accountants, protection experts. Bring everyone together. No one knows everything. Our job now is to sort of fit an expert team around our clients and to make sure we can bring them all the help they need.
Yeah, Sophie, have you got anything to add?
Yeah, I would just echo that really. And I, from talking to professional advisors in Kent, we know that high net worths want philanthropy advice. We know that it's of huge benefit to the professional advisor when they offer it. It enhances their relationship. It deepens that relationship. But often I think they don't necessarily feel confident or comfortable giving that advice. So that's where we at the Community Foundation or other philanthropy advisors can really come in. We want to be an asset they can use or an extra element in their toolkit, if you like, where they can give us a call and we can talk to either them or their client and just have that very early stages of a conversation about what their client's interested in, what their values are, what area they'd like to give in, etc. Just so we can get the conversation started. Actually, I read some research that said that if a professional advisor has a good conversation about philanthropy with their client, that client is likely to give 17 times more to charity, which I think is just so impactful.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, isn't it, Sophie, that the value that the community foundations can bring, particularly around some of those background checks and what we rather kind of formally call due diligence. So for lots of clients or donors, you know, perhaps they're at the start of their giving, or maybe they're powering up into something a bit more strategic, and so they're a bit concerned about how to do the relevant background checks. But if you work through your donor advised funds, then you've got a whole team, haven't you, who'll be able to do those checks and give those donors the confidence that they're reaching out to the right kind of organisations, you know, who've got the capacity to take on funding and are able to deliver in the way that they say that they will.
Yeah, definitely. I think it just provides an extra level of reassurance so they can have confidence in their giving, that they know that because these organisations are often very small. I know, for example, in Kent, there's over 3,000 registered charities, but then there's hundreds and hundreds of other incorporated groups or voluntary organisations, volunteers that run coffee mornings, etc. And you may want to give to these groups, but be unsure about their governance, or are they really going to do what they're going to say they're going to do? And so giving through someone like a community foundation, you know that we've done the checks. And actually, we go the extra mile. We kind of support that organisation. Like, our grants managers will go out there and kind of do the hand-holding and making sure that they can be as impactful as they can.
There must be such a sense of overwhelm, particularly if you're new to philanthropy and you're thinking, well, I know I want to make a difference. I know I want to give in some way, but there are just so many people that I could give to, so many organisations that I could give to. Where do I even start? So it sounds like KCF is a bit of that kind of, it's straddling both sides, as it were, that you can connect those people together and really support them and support the people who are receiving that funding. What can professional advisors do to support clients to feel confident? So if we can get into some of, I was just thinking about, you know, they could be quite deep, difficult conversations, you know, challenging conversations about values, about you know, as I say, that kind of overwhelm. So what can professional advisors do to shore themselves up a bit for those conversations? What sort of skills might they need?
It's a really interesting question. I think, speaking for myself, you know, working as I do with our multi-generational families of wealth, I feel that empathy is probably one of the biggest skills that I draw on all the time. And even though the clients and the donors that I speak with, you know, have got a very, very different level of wealth, not only from me, but also from each other, actually, people face the same problems about talking to their families about their wealth. You know, what is it for and what is it not for? They face the same problems as they're trying to understand and build a strategy for their giving. So oftentimes here, when we start those conversations with our donors, whether they're just starting out, you know, making that move from tactical giving, often giving to appeals, national or global appeals, like we've seen recently with Ukraine or the terrible earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. If they're turning their face to something a little bit more strategic, perhaps looking to find those longer term relationships with the charities that they want to support, starting from that place of what are your family values? What's important to you across the generations is a great place to start.
Sophie, any thoughts on that from your perspective?
Yeah. I would say we start in from a very similar position. We'll often have potential donors that come to us also with a particular, I suppose because we're county based, we cover both Kent and Medway. They might have a specific geographic area as well. So if they're from a particular area or they have a particular link to that area, for example, the west of Kent, Sevenoaks or Tunbridge Wells, they might limit their giving to that area initially. And then as we develop our relationship or the relationship goes on in time, that might change as it develops. They try out certain things and then they decide, actually, I really enjoy giving in the west of Kent, but the projects that have given me the most joy are the children and young people's projects. So I'm going to keep funding children and young people, but expand that to the whole of Kent. So it's an ongoing relationship and it's something that develops as time goes on.
What I find really interesting as well, we do a bit of data analysis here at Coutts every quarter where we try to unpick the causes that our clients are giving to. And what we find, you know, what certainly I found in the 3 years that I've been working here is that it is that sense of opportunity for young people, which sparks joy in so many of our clients and their giving. So although there's, as you would expect, a whole range of causes that clients give to, nonetheless, time and time again, when I have those rich conversations with donors about their motivations for giving and what gives them the most joy and how they use their philanthropy as a vehicle to speak to their children and their family about their family values and their family wealth, time and time again, those donors say to me, you know, yes, I've worked incredibly hard and I've built a business, you know, for example, but actually I've been really lucky along the way. And I really appreciate that I've been really lucky. What I want to do is to pass a little bit of that luck along. I want to open up opportunities and open the horizons for other young people. And so being able to understand in those conversations, but also have the data to back that up, allows us to create services and support for our clients that really help them to do the things that they want to do.
And if we had a donor on this episode now, what do you think they might ask of advisors? What, you know, what do they need most?
I think that the role of the advisor is changing quite a lot. I think we need to be really credible in the impact space. And that's not to say we should promise the moon. You know, we need to be realistic about achievable change. But nonetheless, if as professional advisors, we don't have credibility here, then we will not find that clients stick with us. And it's particularly true of the rising generation. They quite rightly demand more and, you know, faster from their advisors, more and faster from a legacy that they want to leave behind from their philanthropic giving. And that's a challenge which we should rise to, I would say. It's not just about being part of a wider family. That's certainly what we're hearing from our clients. It's about how you can influence that family, how you can influence where family investments are made, you know, how you can influence where family investments are held. All of this is an important part of that wider piece of funding. And I would say, you know, within any particular philanthropy portfolio, there should be diversification in the same way that you would within your financial portfolio. So for some grants you'll make, you will probably make really small grants, and maybe you'll be the first risky grant that organisation takes on. You might have a larger piece of structural funding for a much, much larger organisation that feels a lot less risky, but perhaps you feel a little bit less connected to that particular organisation in a personal way. So I would certainly say it's worth having a sense as an advisor about that wide range of different opportunities for donors. Sophie, you mentioned a report earlier. There's something I've been reading recently which talks about, you know, the great wealth transfer and how likely it is that the rising generation will change their professional advisors as they, you know, as their parents pass away. So it's a challenge to all of us to remain relevant, to remain authentic, and to really, you know, to really make a difference for our advisors and for the world.
Actually, I had a question for Vicky about the calls on the FCA, so the Financial Conduct Authority, about calls for it to be doing more on philanthropy. And I was just interested in what you thought about that.
Yeah, so this is a question for the policy geeks amongst us out there. So I'm definitely really interested in this one. So I live with an economist, so I'm super interested in how the wider kind of financial piece affects our culture. And also, like, what is the role of regulation here? What is the role of regulators, advisors in how we build a better and more just society? So the FCA is currently consulting around potential regulation for sustainable finance advice from financial institutions. So what it's saying is, where do you think advice should sit? Currently, no financial institutions are required to give philanthropy advice. And I think what the FCA, I'm not that I could preempt any reports that they'll make, but I think what the FCA is suggesting with this consultation is that the financial sector has a responsibility for the S and the G and not just the E in ESG. So we've seen a lot of financial institutions really double down on net zero and environmental impacts of their investments. But I would say, as a challenge to all financial institutions, I don't think that we're as good at the social side, and we should be. So it'd be really interesting to see whether the FCA does want to align this with consumer duty, does start to use the carrot and the stick of requiring financial institutions to offer sustainable financial advice, including philanthropy advice. And my final challenge, I would say, and one that I hope the FCA is listening to as it listens to this podcast, is
we'll
that
send
it's not
it to them.
Absolutely. Because you see, it's not enough that the FCA requires financial institutions to offer this kind of advice. Because what we understand, I think, those of us who come from the social sector and those of us in financial institutions who are really engaged with the social sector, is you need to understand good practice in this regard. And I think it would be a huge missed opportunity if banks just decided that they could just train up a bunch of bankers and make this happen internally without really drawing on the magnificent range of expertise that the social sector can bring. I mean, we saw what happened during COVID, the way that funders changed the way they funded, the way that they got out of the way to let amazing community groups and charities deliver help where it was needed most. This is the kind of approach which financial institutions should take. Expert advice from the social sector in the same way they would take expert advice from other specialists.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm all up for that.
But I think it's also just a call for all professional advisors, even if you think philanthropy advice is completely out of your remit, that they should be considering it. Like, starting to at least know who the experts are in the sector that they can refer to.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we're a pretty kind of friendly sector, that us philanthropist advisors, you know, we're really keen to engage, we're really keen to help. And to give you an example, I went to a meeting with one of my colleagues from our Reading office a few weeks ago, and it was a meeting with a potential client, so someone who didn't bank with Coutts but was looking to understand a little bit more about, well, basically our philanthropy offering. And he had been recommended by his accountant, who knew the Coutts regional office. The accountant came along to that meeting, of course, because we've got nothing to hide. We're not looking to take that client away. We would expect that client, should they decide to bank with Coutts, to stay on, to keep that accountant as part of their broader and wider team that I spoke about earlier. It's not our intention to cut away those relationships. And so I would say, in a really heartfelt plea to any of the professional advisors, don't feel, you know, that there's a don't feel frightened about engaging with some of the people in this space, because we're not looking to steal clients. What we're looking to do is to build out a team of experts to really help bring in expertise where it's needed.
I'd like to think, anyway, from a real kind of ethical space, like if you have a client who's potentially interested in a particular charity and you refer them to us and we're not quite right, or we actually know a specific charity that could really do with that donation, we will point them in the direction of that charity. We're completely independent and have been in this space for over, at KCF we were formed in 2001, so for over 20 years. So we want to do what's right for the voluntary sector in Kent, and we always come from that position.
I think there's a really interesting challenge, and I think this is where the community foundations do this so well, where we act as a gentle challenge as well as advisor to our donors. So we say, of course, we will help you engage with those causes that you care about, and we'll make it easy and smooth, and we'll get out of the way when we need to, so you can build that relationship with those charities that you want to support. But we'll also offer that challenge. You know, have you considered some unrestricted funding? What about the Funder Plus model? How do we wrap around a bit of extra support to allow organisations to deliver those unfundable bits of work as well? So how do we persuade funders to pay for the lights staying on and the heating, you know, in these times of enormous energy bills? How do we help funders to pay for evaluation as well as for project delivery? Those are the challenges which I think as advisors we bring to our clients, and which I think they expect us to bring to them.
It feels to me that both your roles and organisations are in this incredibly rich position that where actually there could be some real, like real systemic change that happens, because you're able to bring that challenge. What I'm hearing is you're coming from a really pro-social place. You know, the two of you here, you've got strong pro-social values. It's about bigger than self-thinking, and sometimes these conversations aren't had in this kind of space. So yeah, it feels an incredibly brilliant position. You know, what a great position to be in. But it, again, you know, it has to be done right, as you say, Vicky. You know, that kind of, you need to have a real understanding of what lived experience is, and you need to have an understanding of those bigger systematic structural issues that people are facing. I'm wondering about if there's someone who's listening to this that's really thinking, you know, I know that I'm in this position and I know that I really want to help make a difference. Like, what is my next step? You know, what do I do next? What would you say to them?
Well, I'd probably say get in touch with your local community foundation and to see if there's something that they can do to help. And there's a real spectrum of giving, right? I mentioned the tactical and the strategic elements earlier, and I'm sure that all of us give tactically. You know, we give to national appeals. We sponsor our friends and our friends' children. And that's absolutely fine. That's an completely valid part of your giving strategy. But as we see people wanting to move, I guess, away from the charity to something that feels a bit more like philanthropy, that is a bit more medium or longer term, is looking perhaps to address some of those inequalities and disadvantages that exist in our society, there's a spectrum of ways to do that. And some people love to use donor advised funds, and they find that a really quick and easy way to get money out to groups on the ground quickly and effectively. Others are keen to work through funding partners, you know, across the country. Others set up their own charitable trust. And I think, Sophie, you mentioned that you had a client that has that in place already. So none of these approaches are wrong. It's a really rich tapestry of different approaches and ways of managing your giving and your family's giving. And I would say, you know, it can feel like a really big jump to make from the I give a small amount to I want to make a difference. But I'm not Melinda Gates. I'm not Mackenzie Scott. I don't have $800 million to give away to end malaria. But the point is, not starting can be the biggest mistake.
Yeah, and actually, that was something that I think if you listen to the other podcast, Beth and Richard talked a lot about in terms of barriers to giving. Quite often it's the overwhelm at the beginning. And I think that's no matter the size of the donation. I think Beth talks about kind of analysis paralysis, like there's so many charities, who do you choose? So I think it is important, if you are a professional advisor and you have a client who wants or potentially wants to give, they're not sure, it's to have those conversations and just start. That's it. It's getting past that first stumbling block.
And I think, you know, the personal meaning is important. And I've spoken with many donors who feel a little bit embarrassed and guilty at enjoying it quite so much. And I would say, do you know, if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to stick with it. I want you to be giving money to charity for the next 40 years. I want you to set up a multi-generational family trust and inspire your children with a love of this pro-social action. And all of us, you know, we have this opportunity to have an impact on our changing world. And for some of us, that's giving locally. For some of us, that's lobbying government. For some of us, that's acting and leveraging our reputation. All of us need to educate ourselves in terms of what's available, the challenges that are out there, the approaches that are making the difference, and just find ways to spark that bit of joy in our giving, as well as to, in a very worthy way, try to make the world a better place.
Yeah, I'm all for worthy. I'm all for, like, do-gooders.
Vicky, got me thinking about, in terms of inspiring confidence in local giving, the fact that you can very easily get out there and actually see the difference that is made, I think is really kind of joy sparking, because you know that it's making an impact and that gives you the confidence to kind of give more and give again.
You know, I'm thinking of your role as an advisor, Vicky, and what you do, Sophie, that in those jobs you're also able to find so much meaning for yourself. You know, that kind of really connecting with what you value and what you care about and the difference you want to make. And I think, you know, for any professional advisors listening, is to really kind of tap into what are your values, because this feels to me like there is so much opportunity. There's so much opportunity, and we can feel really optimistic about this. What can we do in our roles within our local community as well?
The fact that we know individuals want that advice, so you can tap into your own values, but also feel confident that you don't have to be nervous of approaching topics like giving and philanthropy, because we know it's something the research shows that the people want.
And I would say, picking up, Sarah, on your note of optimism, I wholeheartedly agree. Optimism is not a luxury, it is an essential if we are going to build a better world, if we're going to be part of that just transition. And we can't do that without feeling like we have power, we have agency, we have the connections and the relationships with the great people we need to make it happen.
Yeah, tingles, let's change the world. Let's wrap up. Like, what would be your final top tip, something you want to share with someone who's listening to this podcast, who's thinking, yeah, okay, I'm ready. What do I do?
I would say, you know, be very aware of how this is changing, how the world is changing about what donors want from their advisors. So don't feel intimidated if you think you don't have all of the expertise to hand. You will always retain that conducting role with your clients, but don't be afraid to bring in those extra advisors to help you build those rich and meaningful conversations with your clients. It will only make for a better relationship and for better social outcomes.
Yeah, and I'm going to give a shout out to us. If you do have a client or who's interested in giving but they don't know where to start, please give us a call. We're happy to have, as I said, no obligations chat with them or your client. And yeah, we've been in this space for the past 20 years. There's a network of 47 community foundations around the UK. So we occasionally have clients that or donors that are in both Kent and Sussex or Kent and Essex. So there's a whole national network of us out there. And yeah, we'd be happy to help you support the voluntary sector in Kent.
Vicky, Sophie, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. It's been a really fascinating conversation, and I think we could probably have another 10 episodes, but we're going to wrap up. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
So we hope you enjoyed this episode. We're going to put all the links you need to find out more about Vicky and Sophie and KCF and Coutts into the show notes. And if you would like to know more about working with KCF, please check out their website. Sophie and her colleagues are waiting by the phone for your call. You can do that right now. And a quick shout out to the first episode of this podcast where we explored the joy and effectiveness of local giving. And in that conversation, I was joined by KCF fundholder and enthusiast Richard Oldfield and philanthropic researcher Dr. Beth Breeze, who were perfectly positioned to shed light on philanthropy and the experience of giving through a grantmaker such as KCF. And finally, please, if you've enjoyed this episode, if you've got something from it, share it with your friends, with your colleagues, with your family. Help us to make a bigger difference to our world, to our local community. Take very good care.